I'm Sean Crawford. You might have heard about tax increment financing districts, but do you understand what they do? They've become more popular, with many towns creating multiple TIF districts. And for our Illinois Issues Report, I spoke with University of Illinois Springfield Professor Kenneth Kriz. He's co-author of a book called Tax Increment Financing and Economic Development. Ken, let's begin by talking about how a TIF district actually works. And towns, I know, identify locations within their communities that they target for these districts.
Sure. And so that basically is at the heart of it. TIF is a geographically based economic development incentive. And so the community will identify an area. It could be a single parcel of land, or it could be several parcels together that have some kind of desirable property for the community that they want to develop or maybe redevelop. And they will then go through the process of creating a district which incorporates those parcels.
And these were originally, the idea behind these was to take those parcels, as you mentioned, and attract development to it, areas that might not have otherwise developed without these types of incentives, tax breaks, things of that nature. But what counts as blighted property, well, it seems that definition has been stretched through the years. Is that a fair way to say it?
It certainly has. When TIF was started in the 1950s in California, the original intent was to clear blight within communities. So most of us have an image of what blighted properties probably look like, run down, broken windows, you know, maybe substandard in terms of its walls falling down or something like that. But that has been loosened, in fact, to the point where in many states there is no longer a requirement within laws to have a formal blight definition that's reached. Otherwise, it's so loose that almost any property can be put into a TIF district effectively in several states.
In the beginning, it seemed as though when Illinois towns started to adopt these that we would see one location in a community. Now it's not uncommon to see several. I believe the city of Springfield has, at least 10 different TIF districts?
Yes, it does. And that's also not uncommon throughout the country is to have multiple TIF districts. At one point, in some states, I believe it was Wisconsin, the total value of properties within TIF districts was actually greater than the value that was not in TIF districts. And so to say it's become widespread, I think, is a severe understatement.
So what makes a tax increment financing district so controversial?
Well, I think there's a couple of different reasons. One is kind of along the lines of what we've been talking about is targeting of it. We have case studies in our book of, for example, a cornfield being redeveloped as a TIF district in order to attract a Costco. And so there's a question about targeting. There's also questions about process that's undergone. So typically, and this is true in Illinois, you must have a hearing to establish a district. However, they tend to be scheduled at pretty bad times, and they aren't taken very seriously. Also, there's a requirement in several states for an economic development or economic impact analysis. And again, that's not taken very seriously in a lot of circumstances.
And the way this works is property taxes, for example, are frozen at mm-hmm. a certain level, the level of undeveloped property. And then as all that development comes in and the property value goes up, the developer and quite often the city, I believe, can access that that additional money and use it for improvements to the property?
Well, the value of the revenues that come in above what is called the base goes to the city and the county and the school districts. Mm-hmm. But any additional amount above what is called the increment in the title of the technique goes to the development. And so with that, there's a big concern for example, when you bring in new businesses, they require public services. And so the city has no more money and the county has no more money and the school districts have no more money based upon that development to provide services. And so you have a situation where there might be some inequity that's created.
I believe when these were first becoming more popular in Illinois, we were seeing a time limit of I want to say 23 years that was set in law. That's how long these could be in effect for before the tax breaks basically went away. But that has been extended, not just once, I believe, but even beyond that now. So some of these are going on for decades. And, you know, what's the purpose behind that?
Well, that's actually a really excellent question. And I think if you ask TIF experts, they would say that whereas the establishment of a TIF district certainly may be warranted, the extension is hardly ever warranted because you've either gotten the development that you wanted to in the first place, or the redevelopment and blight remediation, or you haven't. And in either case, there's not a justification. But if I can clarify it just really quickly, in the previous laws, it was actually a longer time frame, and then there were extensions allowed. Under the current law, there are no extensions allowed. However, there's also this huge language that grandfathers in most of the existing TIF districts in the state so that they can extend themselves. And that's just happened recently here in Springfield.
Local officials, seems to me, are over a barrel a little bit here because you want a developer to come in. The developer probably understands that this benefit is a possibility. If you don't offer it, they may go somewhere else. So it seems as though from a local official standpoint, they may not be in love with the idea of TIF districts, but what else are they going to do?
That's exactly right. And I think you hit the nail on the head about the real conundrum regarding TIF is that, you know, for an economic development official or an elected official, it may be the only way to get that development. And so they really care less about what I would argue from a societal perspective is the most important thing, which is not whether that particular developer would come, but would any developer come. That's at the heart of what used to be called the but-for clause that was required in TIF, saying that the development wouldn't happen without TIF. And so if you're going to talk to a academic like me, what I'm going to tell areas is it may pay actually to wait a couple of years and maybe the project will happen without TIF. But I fully understand the perspective of a developer or a elected official who's looking at basically, can we get this development?
And let me go back to something we sort of touched on before, but one of the other costs of a TIF district is the fact that you have all these other taxing bodies, schools especially, who in many cases are not benefiting from the rise in value of the area that's in a TIF district because of the way that is structured. So I believe in some cases there are agreements worked out where schools get a little bit of the money or a portion of it.
Well, and again, this is one of those things that's really difficult to figure out, I have to say. And the other thing I would say is pretty clear is not only may they not be getting extra revenues, but they may actually have extra costs because with the increased population, they may have increased costs for the district. And so that to me, in a nutshell, the what you just said is why the targeting is so important. So if what we're doing is we're getting rid of, say, environmental contamination on a property, what we call brownfields, that would be something where I think it's pretty easy to argue that the property wouldn't develop without TIF, and therefore anything you get from it is better than nothing. And so I think any academic, anybody who is being fairly thoughtful about it, but if it's a property that's in, you know, good repair and just has a few, maybe it's not in the most attractive area or something, well, then it may pay for the, as a whole, for the city to let the property's value go down. Yes, they won't be collecting anything on the property for a couple of years, but then it may develop on its own. So the ones that I think are probably the most egregious are on properties that are either unoccupied or already a thriving area.
So as someone who has studied this issue, in your mind, are TIF districts a good thing or not?
I'm actually agnostic on TIF. I think it works. It's worked extremely well in some areas. If you look at Atlantic Station in Atlanta, Georgia, where they turned a former steel mill with all kinds of environmental problems into a thriving mixed-use community, That was obviously a success, and I don't think it would have happened without TIF. But then some of the case studies that are in our book where you have people developing vacant land or giving people a TIF in the expectation that something bad is going to happen in the future, that's where you start to get, you know, into this area where you're probably playing a little bit fast and loose with the rules. And so I think TIF, like anything else, is a good potential tool, but we have to be very careful as a society about how it's used. And if we target it well, and if we require but-for tests, strong but-for tests, and good analysis, we can make it a workable tool of economic development.
That's Kenneth Criz. He's a professor of public administration at the University of Illinois Springfield. He co-authored a book called Tax Increment Financing and Economic Development. You can read more of our Illinois Issues report at nprillinois.org.